one. That would bear his signature, would it not?
Ah, said Lauderback.
Yes. But no, said Gascoigne, changing his mind. It wouldn't be enough. To prove a forgery of a dead man's hand, you would need more than one example of his signature.
How many would you need? Said Lauderback.
Gascoigne shrugged. I am not familiar with the law, he said, but I would imagine that you would need several examples of his true signature in order to prove the aberrations in the false one.
Several examples, Lauderback echoed.
Well, said Gascoigne, rising, I hope for your sake that you find something, Mr. Lauderback. But in the meantime, I'm afraid that I'm legally obliged to carry out Mr. Garrity's instruction and take these papers to the bank.
Upon quitting the wayfarer's fortune, the chaplain had not escorted Anna Wetherill directly to the courthouse. He took her instead into the Garrick's Head Hotel, where he ordered one portion of fish pie, the perennial lunchtime special, and one glass of lemon cordial. He directed Anna to be seated, placed the plate of food in front of her, and bid her to eat, which she did obediently and in silence. Once her plate was clean, he pushed the sugared drink across the table towards her and said, "Where is Mr. Stearns?" Anna did not seem surprised by the question. She picked up the glass, sipped at it, winced at the sweetness, and then sat for a moment watching him.
"Inland," she said at last. "Somewhere inland. I don't know exactly where."
"North or south of here?"
"I don't know."
"Is he being held against his will?"
"I don't know."
"You do know," said Devlin.
"I don't," Anna said. "I haven't seen him since January, and I've no idea why he vanished like he did. I only know that he's still alive and he's somewhere inland."
"Because you've been getting messages inside your head."
"Messages wasn't the right way to describe it," Anna said. "That wasn't right. It's more like a feeling. Like when you're trying to remember a dream that you had, and you can remember the shape of it, the sense of it, but no details, nothing sure. And the more you're trying to remember, the more hazy it becomes."
Devlin was frowning. "So you have a feeling?"
"Yes,"
Anna said. "You have a feeling that Mr. Stearns is somewhere inland, and that he's alive?"
"Yes," said Anna. "I can't give you any details. I know it's somewhere muddy. Or leafy. Somewhere near water. Only it isn't the beach. The water's quick-moving. Over stones. You see, as soon as I try and put it into words, it trips away from me."
"This all sounds very vague, my dear."
"It's not vague," Anna said. "I'm certain of it. Just as when you're certain you did have a dream, you knew you dreamed, but you can't remember any of the details."
"How long have you been having these feelings, these dreams?"
"Only since I stopped whoring," Anna said. "Since my blackout."
"Since Stearns disappeared, in other words?"
"The 14th of January," said Anna. "That was the date."
"Is it always the same? The water, the mud, the same dream?"
"No."
She did not elaborate, and to prompt her, Devlin said, "Well, what else?"
"Oh," she said, embarrassed, "just sensations, really. Snatches. Impressions."
"Impressions of what?"
She looked away from him.
"Impressions of me," she said.
"I'm afraid I don't understand you."
She turned her hand over.
"What he thinks of me, Mr. Stearns, I mean. What he dreams about when he imagines me."
"You see yourself, but through his eyes."
"Yes," Anna said. "Exactly."
"But I do infer that Mr. Stearns holds you in high esteem."
"He loves me," she said,
and then after a moment she said it again.
"He loves me."
Devlin studied her critically.
"I see," he said. "Has he made an avowal of his love?"
"No," Anna said. "He doesn't need to. I know it just the same."
"Do you get these feelings frequently?"
"Very frequently," she said. "He thinks of me all the time."
Devlin nodded. The situation was at last becoming clear to him, and with this dawning clarity his heart was sinking in his chest.
Are you in love with Mr. Staines, Miss Wetherell?
We spoke of it, she said, the night he vanished. We were talking nonsense, and I said something silly about unrequited love, and he became very serious, and he stopped me, and he said that unrequited love was not possible, that it was not love. He said that love must be freely given and freely taken, such that the lovers in joining make the equal halves of something whole.
A passionate sentiment, Devlin said. This seemed to please her.
Yes, she said.
But he did not declare his love for you after all that.
He didn't make any vows. I said that.
And nor did you.
I never got another chance, she said. That was the night he disappeared.
Carol Devlin sighed. Yes, he understood Anna Wetherill at long last, but it was not a happy understanding. Devlin had known many women of poor prospects and limited means, whose only transport out of the miserable cage of their unhappy circumstance was the flight of the fantastic. Such fantasies were invariably magical. Angelic patronage, invitations into paradise, and Anna's story, touching though it was, showed the same strain of the impossible. Why, it was painfully clear. The most eligible bachelor of Anna's acquaintance possessed a love so deep and pure that all respective differences between them were rendered immaterial. He was not dead, he was only missing. He was sending her messages that proved the depth of his love, and these were the messages that only she could hear. It was a fantasy, Devlin thought. It was a fantasy of the girl's own devising. The boy could only be dead.
You want Mr. Staines to love you very much, don't you, Miss Wetherill?
Anna seemed offended by his implication.
He does love me.
That wasn't my question.
She squinted at him.
Everyone wants to be loved.
That's very true, Devlin said sadly. We all want to be loved. And need to be loved, I think. Without love, we cannot be ourselves.
You're of a mind with Mr. Staines.
Am I?
Yes, Anna said. That is precisely the sort of thing that he would say.
Your Mr. Staines is quite the philosopher, Miss Wetherill.
Why, Reverend, Anna said, smiling suddenly. I believe you just paid yourself a compliment.
They did not speak for a moment. Anna sipped again at her sugared drink, and Devlin, brooding, looked out across the hotel dining room. After a moment, Anna's hand went to her bosom, where the forged deed of gift still lay against her skin. Devlin looked sharply at her.
You have ample time.